Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braden. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, are you fired up for this weekend's SEC slate?
Mike, I am fired up. Let's go. We got some great games this weekend. We're kind of getting to the end of those one-sided non-conference games. We're getting some conference play. We're getting some showdowns with Texas A&M and Notre Dame. So the SEC is the epicenter of college football this weekend. I know you love those like monikers of like Showdown Saturday, Show Me Saturday. Well, that's what we are here in week three. So I can't wait for these games this week.
Yeah, some separation will be, found, I think. I think we're going to learn a lot. It's just so difficult, Stephen, 2 weeks in with almost everybody playing one FCS game. It's like, well, what do we make of these results? And I think week three, not that, you know, obviously the final chapter, but it's almost like the first chapter is coming to an end here. Week three coming up. Can't wait for it. We've got all these conference games. But before we get into it, as always, Stephen, got to remind the folks to go on over to MyBookie, the online sports book. MyBookie.ag is the website, the presenting sponsor of the show all football season long. So if you go over to MyBookie and you put in an initial deposit and put in that promo code SEC, they're willing to give you a wager up to $500 that is absolutely guaranteed. You win the wager, you get to keep your money, you can cash out and see you later. But if you lose it, hey, they're going to give you exactly your first bet right back again, all the way up to $500 if you put in that promo code SEC over at MyBookie. Fade my picks. Listen to Stephen here, the encyclopedia, and you can't lose. You know what?
I am 0-2 on the locks.
Okay, fade him too. Hey, never mind.
so we're like 0-4 and like locks between the two of us? We're like the Chad Morris of the SEC here. What are we doing?
We're the opposite of a guarantee. I'll tell you that. You know what?
We're just trying to win the cousin some money. So if you can fade us now, I think we're going to get hot as the season goes along. Mike, we were out there at practice this week. The guys are flying around. We went to the film room. We gave away our play calling stuff unlike somebody else. We're going to get this thing on track.
Absolutely. Well, Steven, you know who's always got it on track, and that's our friend, Cousin JR. He's back again, as always. Doesn't matter the day, the time, date, doesn't matter the week. JR's here for us. We appreciate you, JR.
Legend, Cousin JR has done it again.
This time, JR has gifted Thomas Roberts. Thomas, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you, JR, the legend. And we also got another legend in here. We got Liquid, who I'm going to stop making fun of Florida because I got a feeling they could come back. I've noticed a lot of Florida fans are MIA this week. Not Liquid. Liquid's a legend. Shout out Liquid, who he's making the picks for the Cousins on the Thursday show. So stay tuned for that. He's already made his predictions. He's gifted Pigpen. Pigpen, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy of old Liquid. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much. And before we get into Steven's predictions here, he's back with another one of our key sponsors back for the fifth year in a row, Stephen, is Prize Picks. So maybe you're not into wagering on the games themselves. Maybe you're not into the over-unders, things of that nature. Over at Prize Picks, it's daily fantasy sports, and we love the Prize Picks because they have college football selections, and there was a ton of great ones to pick from. So if you go over to prizepicks.com, you put in that promo code SEC, you play five, you get 50 over at Prize Picks. That's a heck of a deal. And Steven, last week, went 5-1 on his Prize Picks selection. So he's got several for us here this week. Will you reveal your Prize Picks selections for us, Steven?
Mike, let's try to make the cousin some extra cash this week. So passing yards. Ty Simpson is at 247.5. Now, admittedly, I don't think we know how good Wisconsin's defense is because of who they played. They've played Miami of Ohio, and they've played a bad Middle Tennessee offense. So there is some unknown here. However, looks like Ryan Williams is going to be back. Like the way Ty Simpson played last week after the start against Florida State. So I think he can get more than 250 passing yards. And considering what's going on with the ground game, We'll see if Jam Miller is back. I think Ty Simpson, I'll take the more than side of that. I am also going to take Garrett Nussmeier, more than 224.5. I think we saw this in the opener against Clemson. I think he'll bounce back to after last week's showing against Louisiana Tech. I think if LSU is going to win this game, it's going to be defense and Nussmeier. So I'm going to start my plays this week with those two. Mike, am I crazy?
Well, the only concern there for me, and this is a good concern for Alabama, is maybe Ty Simpson doesn't play the whole game because we're blowing Wisconsin out, you know, to such a degree. And I know they put in the backup there for a couple series. It was a little early, I thought. You know, there's a whole backstory there. But, yeah, considering Wisconsin's Power 5 team and considering what Florida State did to us, I don't think at any point in the up and down, inconsistent tenure that is Kalen DeBoer, that we could sit here and guarantee that we're going to whoop anybody. So, yeah, I'm pretty confident that Ty Simpson is going to play deep into this football game. So that would be my sole concern with Nussmeier and Ty Simpson. But I do like those ones.
It also, I think, with Ryan Williams coming back, and I think that's a fair concern. I could also see with Ryan Williams coming back, all it takes is like one really long touchdown and you're already close to the, you know, 100 yards. So I think also, you know, we'll see how if Jam Miller comes back, but it does feel like right now they're going to have to lean on the pass to win these games. So I am a little bit worried, but hey, we went 5-1 last week. We're going to try to make the Cousins a little money by taking Ty Simpson and Nussmeier on the more than side.
I love it.
All right, Mike, I'm going to go to Texas A&M and Notre Dame. I'm going to take the Notre Dame side of this, and I'm going to take Jeremiah Love, 77.5. I'm going to take the more than side. I think he's undervalued because of what happened in the opener. Notre Dame, number one, didn't do a good job of getting him the ball, and they're going to try to run the ball this week against Texas A&M's defense, considering what's transpired in the UTSA game. Notre Dame probably sees this as an opportunity to bounce back. So I expect a heavy workload for Jeremiah Love. I think he can get to 100 yards here. So give me 77.5 on the more than side. And let's go ahead on the Texas A&M side and take KC Concepcion. He's at 41.5 in receiving yards. Give me the more than side of that.
Okay, I like Concepcion. I hate to love, but I get why you went there. I figured you would but yeah, I'm not here for this Notre Dame love. Who are you, Shane Gillis?
You may like this play then. Let's go to the LSU Florida game. I like Aaron Anderson. He's at 69.5. I like the more than side of this. I know LSU's got a lot of weapons, but I think we saw this in the Clemson game, can take a short pass, can go a long ways. I think there's that game-breaking ability to where you may only need like one or two big plays here. So I'm going to take the more than side for Aaron Anderson in LSU in Florida. Am I crazy?
I'm afraid I don't think you are, Steven. But I think for Florida fans, they would like to believe you are. So, I don't know. That's the hardest game perhaps for me to predict this weekend is Florida LSU. I have no idea, but I see your logic, and heck, you went 5-1 on the prize picks last week, so I can't really argue.
If we went 5-1 last week, it probably means we're going 1-5 this week. So maybe there's like some reverse psychology. I will say, to close out our prize picks, Mike, I've got, I think, four kind of like freebies here. Like when we look at passing touchdowns, our friends at Prize Picks have DJ Lagway, Marcel Reed, and Diego Pavia. They're all 0.5. So all they have to do is throw one to hit that goal. So I'm taking the more than side. And Mike, I don't want to make you and Shane mad by saying this. I'm also going to take Joey Aguilar, more than 0.5 interceptions. None so far. I'm going to take him to throw one against Georgia.
Oh, I get it. I get it, Steven. I had an idea that you would do something like that. But you know who does love that is JR. He gave us $5. He says, we'll be friends next week, Mike. Yo, dog. So, I think JR is loving that one, Steven. And quite honestly, I think that's where I would lean as well. I know he's played damn near flawless so far, But it's going to be a completely different story going up against East Georgia defensive back. So now get back to me after the game. Maybe he cleans up, you know, the pass that he had, those interceptions. But until then, I'm counting on him throwing one. I'm also counting on Kyle Bulkawa. I'm sure I butchered that. But Kyle, I'm sorry. And welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Kyle. And thank you. Wow, Tennessee Legends. I mean, you don't get a better sponsor than damn Tennessee Legend over here. They've gifted 5 memberships. Steven James Corns, Frank Broshaska, I'm sure I butchered that, Big Ronnie, Kyle Cooper, and Rusty Boy. Welcome to
the family,
courtesy of old Tennessee Legend. Go check them out. Appreciate you, Tennessee Legend. Like I said, the best damn sponsor there is out there. All right, Steven, so we've talked around it. This is what the folks are here for Steven's predictions for week 3 in the SEC. You ready to make them?
Mike, let's make some picks. And I think you said something at the start that's key, is like, we have week 1, we have week 2. We're going to really start to learn a lot about these teams for sure in week 3, because we got a lot of weird results. I feel like we'll walk away from this week knowing a lot more about these teams.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go with, I believe we've got only one FCS game on the docket this weekend. So I don't have a point spread, but for Alcorn, Mississippi State, 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 Central, of course, on ESPN and SEC Network Plus. Safe assumption, Steven, you're going to pick Mississippi State. What will you be looking for from the Bulldogs? And while we're at it, can you give us a prediction as well?
Absolutely. Mike, I think the biggest thing that I think about when it comes to FCS games for SEC teams is simply get ahead, win the game, play a lot of people, don't get anybody hurt, and get ready for the next week. So it's the perfect week 3 opponent after you beat Arizona State. Like, you've had to hear, you know, read the press clippings and all that stuff. Like, Mississippi State shouldn't have to sweat too much here. I think what I'm looking for is, I mean, just Mississippi State to continue to show improvement on defense. I like what they did last week, shutting down Sam Levitt. This is a game, in theory, they could probably give up just single digits in points. So continuing to see progress on defense. Also, the young quarterbacks for Mississippi State are really interesting. You know, Taylor and Cromanhawk, this is a game where you could get them in and get some work. So I don't think Mississippi State should have to sweat here. Maybe they're a little sluggish because the Arizona State win. I think they pull away 52-10 over Alcorn State.
Wow. 52, that's it? No, I'm just kidding.
I gave him a slow start, fast finish. So.
No, yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, Mississippi State, again, Jeff Lebien, all these offenses they get, which, you know, how could you not get swept up in the passing attack, you know, particularly when you wins you a game against Arizona State. But the bread and butter is the ground game, and they got a lot of running backs too. So I think they'll eat, obviously, this week as well. Yeah, I think as much as we want to see the quarterbacks, and we will, I think this will be a dominant game on the ground for Mississippi State.
Could also, if you think about the, you know, if you could find an over under for this game, you think about, you know, the running game and just almost like doing what you have to do to win this game and get out, like after the Arizona State game. And you're thinking, you know, Mississippi State should be 4-0 given that schedule. So it's kind of one of those weeks where you just empty the bench, you play everybody, you get Chapin his work, you get some running back some work, and you kind of get that offensive line continuing to gel. So it's after the big win last week, it's like the perfect way to get ready for SEC play coming up.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about your favorite Texas Longhorns, Steven, and Arch Manning? You're the president of the fan club. UTEP at number 7, Texas, 4:15 Eastern, 3:15 Central on the SEC Network. Texas favored by just 41.5 points. Heck, the over-under is 51.5, so they're basically telling you they don't think UTEP's going to score, and I would believe that. How bad do you have Texas winning this one?
Mike, I think this is an easy win for Texas. And looking at what's coming up with Sam Houston, and then you start SEC play at Florida, after that. You know, it's kind of like confidence builders after the loss to Ohio State. So you're building some confidence. You're getting Arch Manning on track. I mentioned this on the Monday show. The turnovers for Texas defense against San Jose State last week were great. I think you would like to see maybe the offense have a little bit more of a chance to have some long drives, like piece together some consistency, a little bit more work for Arch Manning in that regard. That's a small thing because really they should dominate here. I think UTEP is much improved in Conference USA. That's Conference USA. This is the SEC. I think UTEP takes care of business. Texas takes care of UTEP 48-6. Worth noting, and I think it's interesting that Malachi Nelson, you know, the former five-star, is the quarterback for UTEP, so it's kind of interesting to see his career path to end up here. I did want to ask you, Mike, about, do you think Texas might be pressing a little too much this season through the first 2 weeks?
I think that's fair, and, you know, I'm wondering again if Sarkisian's cracking a little or if he's just protecting his quarterback, which he should protect the quarterback, but he's drawing more attention to it with his, camera bathroom comments, which is, I mean, he'll never live that down. He's Steve Sharkisian in my mind now, until further notice. But, being number one, God's gift of football, all this attention, I don't think they're handling it too well. And pressing is probably the right term because, heck, all they've done is lose to, I believe Ohio State is currently number one.
Yeah.
Lose at Ohio State by 7 points in a game they played horribly on offense, yet they had an opportunity to win it. So the sky is not falling by any means, but certainly it feels like a program that feels the weight of the world. And fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, they're not going to have an opportunity to kind of showcase what they really got until October 4th at the earliest. And heck, I mean, Gainesville could be burning by that time. So, you know, you go down there and whoop on them, no one's going to care. It may not be till October 11th, the Oklahoma game, where we have a read and Texas gets that national respect after a week one game that was not to their liking.
I think you can, I mean, I always hate to like read into things, but it just seems like with Ryan Wingo off to a little bit of a slow start, we'd like to see Colin Simmons a little bit more active in the next couple games. Like, it does make you wonder a little bit. Number one, a lot of pressure, slow starts by some of your superstars. You kind of wonder. And so to some extent, like these next 2 weeks, like you kind of, maybe you can get some of those guys going because they're going to need them for that Florida and Oklahoma games coming up. So easy win for Texas. But within that, I think there's going to be some, let's get these guys going. And I'm going to be looking for that on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about this one, Steven? Another big spread here. We got South Alabama at number 24, Auburn. Auburn's a 24.5-point favorite. Over-under is 53.5. This game is 12:45 Eastern, 11:45 Central on the SEC Network. Hugh Freeze and them boys going to cruise to 3-0, Stephen?
I think so. Now, the full caveat is we've seen Hugh Freeze kind of have some weird losses at times at Auburn. South Alabama does have a good offense. Major Applewhite is their head coach. You may remember Kentrell Bullock, who played at Ole Miss a couple years ago. He's South Alabama's starting running back, and they've got a good receiver and a good quarterback. So they could at least test Auburn's defense here, much better than Ball State did last week. You know, when you look at Auburn in kind of the timing of this matchup, Oklahoma coming up next week. So is there a look ahead? Do they just take care of business? I think they take care of business. I don't know the score is necessarily as one-sided as we saw last week against Ball State. Need to see Jackson Arnold continue to build confidence in the passing game. Some things on the offensive line maybe to clean up after giving up 4 sacks last week. So I like South Alabama to get to 13, but I like Auburn to get to 38. So I think they move to 3-0 and set up a massive showdown against Oklahoma next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And again, I pose this to Shane. I'll pose it to you as well, because I've been so hard on Auburn, so I'm trying to butter them up now. Could this be the best team in the SEC that nobody around the conference or maybe around the country is really talking about?
That's interesting. I could see that. I mean, Missouri might be in that conversation too. Mm-hmm. I think for Auburn, I think probably a little bit, I think nationally, probably kind of easy to dismiss them given the last two seasons and, you know, some of the things that Hugh Freeze has said during the offseason. But I think that win over Baylor should have been a wake up call, because I think we saw the potential for this team. They've got a great ground game. Jackson Arnold has played well so far. We know they're better on defense than what they showed, giving up all those yards to Baylor. So I think maybe the scary thing, if you're another SEC team on the schedule, is it does feel like there's another level this offense can get to if Jackson Arnold continues to get more comfortable here.
Mm-hmm. I've been saying it all along, Stephen. Buy your Auburn stock while you can. All right, speaking of stock to buy, you referenced Missouri perhaps being that team. They're facing Louisiana Lafayette. I ain't calling them Louisiana. Shout out Missouri, your favorite, number 25 Mizzou. Favored by 27.5 points, over under 49.5. This game kicks off at 4 Eastern, 3 Central, ESPN, and SEC Network Plus. How bad is Drinking Company going to win this one?
Easily. So Louisiana, one of the preseason favorites in the Sun Belt West Division, but they've already lost their starting quarterback, and that is Walker Howard, who is the former Ole Miss and LSU transfer. They have a good rushing attack, so they may try to shorten this game, limit the possessions by Missouri. But I also think, you know, the same thing that we talked about with Mississippi State applies to Missouri. You had the big border war victory. There's so much emotion that went into that. I could see kind of a sluggish start, but I think Missouri pulls away in the end. And I think thinking of what's ahead for Missouri, knowing you get South Carolina and, you know, UMass, like you're really focusing on the South Carolina game coming up, which means you've got to keep Bo Prabhula healthy. So I expect that he'll probably does a lot of damage through the air, need to continue to see this offensive line continue to progress and play better. I don't think they have much trouble here. I think Missouri takes care of business and moves to 3-0. Give me the Tigers 45, the Raging Cajuns 10.
Nice. Just 45? No. Okay. How about someone who needs to score 45, Stephen? That'd be old Kentucky. Kentucky hosting Eastern Michigan. Night game, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central. ESPNU nationally televised. What? Kentucky favored by 24.5 points. Over-under is 45.5. So not a ton of points expected here, Stephen. Man, what do you see here? And I mean, is this, I don't want to say trap game, but is this dangerous at all for old Kentucky?
That's what Eastern Michigan was doing last week, right? Just lulling the Kentucky fans to sleep because they lost to Long Island, and here they're going to show up and be ready to play.
They were looking ahead.
Right. Looking ahead after they saw their MAC conference mates, Toledo, not play so great in week one in Lexington. I think, Mike, I think this should be an easy victory for Kentucky. If it's close, there's real problems here because Eastern Michigan's defense is not great. It should give Boley a chance to throw the ball around, give this passing attack a chance to work on some things before they get back into SEC play coming up. So I think if this game is close, it is a major issue for Kentucky, just given the matchups and given that we saw Eastern Michigan lose to Long Island last week. So I'm focused on seeing this passing game and quarterbacks. Want to see them take a big step forward and build some confidence. So I will take Kentucky 34, Eastern Michigan 10. Because Mark Stoops is motivated.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. I hope you're right, Stevie, because I'm just, I don't know. I think it's a lot easier to play and get up for, obviously, a conference game. You're undefeated. I don't know. This is one I got my eye on. I don't know why. I got a sneaky feeling about it. I'll just say that.
I would be more concerned if this was like Ohio, because Ohio has beat West Virginia last week and they gave Rutgers a hard time in week one. I think Toledo might be the best team in the MAC still, and the fact that Kentucky won, that's probably a good sign for this Eastern Michigan team. Now, if they overlook Eastern Michigan because of what happened last week, then we got other problems here.
So based on what you just said there, Kentucky could win the MAC. That's great. All right, shout out Oklahoma, Stephen. Number 13, Oklahoma on the road. What? At Temple, noon Eastern, 11 Central, ESPN2. Oklahoma favored by 24.5 points. Over-under's 51.5. How bad's John Mateer and the boys going to beat old Temple?
Mike, I it's one of those games where do not adjust your like TV sets or schedules because Oklahoma playing at Temple is kind of weird. But it's the Eagle Stadium. It's a great, you know, place for Oklahoma to kind of showcase John Mateer, the current Heisman front runner. And I say that because this is an opportunity against Temple to really flex their muscles, put up some big numbers through the air. Would like to see this Oklahoma rushing attack and offensive line continue to gel. Temple is a much improved team in the American. Casey Keeler, their new head coach, off to a 2-0 start. But 2-0 and facing Oklahoma are significantly different challenges. Like, it's one thing to beat UMass. It's another to beat Oklahoma. My guess is they're going to try and shorten the game. Like, this their kind of style to play on offense. So wouldn't surprise me to see Temple kind of frustrate Oklahoma early. But I think given once Mateer gets on track, Oklahoma's defense is too good here. They'll pull away. I think Oklahoma covers here. I got the Sooners 41, Temple 10.
Well, any shot that this is a little bit of a, again, not really, I'm not talking upset, but just sleepy, you know, I don't know. That's going to be the theme. That's another thing, Stephen, where, yes, this is like a separation week, but I also think for teams like Oklahoma, we're going to test this theory. Missouri's an excellent candidate as well, facing Louisiana. Kentucky facing Eastern Michigan. Mississippi State facing Alcorn. These teams, you know, how consistent can they be? Alabama, we'll talk about them in a moment. Alabama, how consistent, you know, after the terrific performance? Is this truly going to be an up-and-down year? I don't know. But this week, will for the games that we predict will be lopsided, I think that's a storyline to watch for the conference. I really do think.
Yeah, it is. Like, just taking care of business is like, it's almost like weird to say that, but it's almost like in these games where, you know, you want to just work on some things, like maybe the score isn't as lopsided as we think, but you're just trying to get through it. It could be a long season too for Oklahoma. If we start thinking to the playoff and, you know, if Oklahoma makes it, you're talking about playing 13, 14 games. Like, you have to get your guys some rest at some point during the year. And that's why I think in a lot of these games, you see the benches get emptied early. You start rotating some guys, which does lead to some maybe inconsistency. So I think to your point, like, it wouldn't shock me here coming off the win against Michigan. You got the road trip to Philadelphia. I suspect there's probably going to be a lot of Oklahoma fans here, not so many Temple fans. You know, it's kind of a weird setup off the win, SEC play coming up. I could see it maybe like being a little bit closer, but it's one of those games where Oklahoma just takes care of business. They're never in doubt on the scoreboard. And I think we may see that across some of these matchups week to week. These teams, we saw it last week too with LSU and Louisiana Tech. I mean, they kind of no-showed and was sleepwalking to a victory. It wouldn't shock me if we see that again from some teams this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, we better not see it, Stephen, from old Alabama. Come on, Alabama hosting Wisconsin. Destroyed them last year. Could very well do the same this year. Alabama's number 19, noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, nationally televised ABC. Alabama, a 20.5 point favorite. Over-under's 47.5. Who do you got winning this one?
Mike, I hesitate to say this. I am a little cautious about putting a ton of stock in Alabama just yet. You know, the win over ULM was great last week. This is a power conference opponent. But it is a power conference opponent that is likely to be without its starting quarterback and also down, you know, some shuffling on the offensive line, maybe down at starting center. I just don't think that this Wisconsin team is built like some of the other Wisconsin teams that we've seen. If this was Ron Dane or James White or somebody coming in there, and they were able to run the ball on Alabama's defense, then I think we're having a different conversation here. But some of the question marks that Alabama has up front right now, given the issues Wisconsin has, I don't know they're going to be able to take advantage of it. And they've got a quarterback, while he started last year at San Diego State, this is a significantly tougher environment at Tuscaloosa. So I like the way Alabama bounced back last week. I'm looking for consistency. I want to see Ty Simpson continue to do what we saw against ULM last week. And in a matchup where it favors Alabama's defense, like, let's see them put the clamps on Wisconsin. They should play well here. So I'm going to take Alabama 34, Wisconsin 13, and put some stock in Kalen DeBoer taking care of business here.
Yeah, and then that'll set up a nice game. We'll see about Georgia. We'll talk about them in a moment. But, yeah, then conference play gets rolling for Alabama. So, yeah, I think a big win is in order here for Alabama, but they better deliver it. You know what?
Especially at home. I mean, if you're Kalen DeBoer, you're trying to get the fan base to buy back into this team. And if you lose to a Wisconsin team that's not a vintage Wisconsin team, some of that even more starts to erode here. So with SEC play coming up, it's just kind of important to start putting the pieces back together. And it starts with a convincing win over Wisconsin.
All right, Steven, let's see. Let's do. There's a lot of great conference games, but we got one more non-conference to talk about. Texas A&M, Stephen. This arguably could be the best game of the slate. Number 16, Texas A&M at number 8, Notre Dame. NBC 7:30, Eastern 6:30, Central. Notre Dame favored by 6.5. What Stephen Lassen was to set this line. Over under 49.5. Does Texas A&M get revenge after suffering a defeat to the Irish last season?
Mike, I like Texas A&M, but let me build to the prediction here. I think Texas A&M is in a good spot here. And I think when you start thinking about like the program growth here, they may go on the road and win this game, and all of a sudden we're talking about something different on Sunday. We're talking about Texas A&M being a top 10 team. We're talking about, okay, now it's playoff, realistic expectations. I know the narrative is going to be if they lose this game, it's going to be, well, Texas A&M falls short. I don't think that's the case necessarily. Like, I think this is a good opportunity for us to see how far this program for Mike Elko has come along in just 2 years. So I think there's a lot of like narratives and storylines at stake here. I think if A&M loses and it's close, I think that tells us a lot. If they get blown out, that's a problem. I am watching, and this is like super like basic, but the two quarterbacks in this game are so fascinating because Marcel Reed looks like he's taking a step forward. You've got CJ Carr for Notre Dame making his second start. He looked great for Notre Dame at times. But also, you know, there's some moments where it's like, okay, he put the ball into too much coverage. Maybe that could be a sack against a better, you know, defense. Like, there are things that Notre Dame and CJ Carr still have to work on. They had the off week last week. They've had 2 weeks to get ready for this game. The other thing is the line of scrimmage. Two great offensive lines. Notre Dame didn't play that way in week one. And I think they're going to look at what UTSA did and say, we can run the ball on these guys. And I think it's a back-to-basics kind of game for Notre Dame. I think they hand the ball off to Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, their backup. If Texas A&M wins that battle, I think they'll win the game. I am going to take, though, sorry, Mike, I'm going to take the Fighting Irish 26-23 in a much closer game than the odds makers in Vegas have it.
Well, I had a feeling you'd do that, Steven. Hey, shout out to Brad Powers, a friend of the show. He does a heck of a job, odds maker. He put this out, Steven. I wanted to share this statistic. A&M is just 3-12 against the spread under Coach Elko, second worst in the country since last season. Meanwhile, Notre Dame 29-14-1 against the spread under Marcus Freeman, best mark in the country since 2022. So, again, does that mean necessarily anything for this game? No, but it is interesting. Worst guy gets the spread. Best guy gets the spread. That's a little something to monitor, I think, going into a huge matchup like this.
As they say, something has to give here, right? And I think that's what's interesting about this game is, I mean, you've got the two quarterbacks with Carr and Reed kind of looking to take that big step forward, like announce their presence on the national scene. I mean, Notre Dame has had some weird losses under Marcus Freeman, Marshall, Northern Illinois, Stanford too at home. So they're gettable in South Bend. So I think Texas A&M can go into this matchup thinking that, yeah, we can, if Marcel Reed plays like he has, we can stop the run. We can win this game. I just think Notre Dame's rushing attack is going to get on track this week. Worth noting, though, Notre Dame is down one of their best offensive linemen. Charles Jagusa got hurt in the offseason. I don't think he's going to be back for this game. So that might be part of their struggles against Miami in week one, too, as they were missing one of their guys. And we'll see if they can adjust from week one to week three.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's fair, Stephen, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, that I don't think A&M gets the benefit of the doubt, not until they prove it. And just, I'm just saying again, I know, didn't you have Notre Dame as like number six in the preseason in the magazine? Again, who, you know, does that really matter? No, but again, that just, point being, this is a quality team. This ain't just some bozo. Like Shane will tell you, Notre Dame's a bunch of bozos. I think they got one hell of a coach. I think damn near everybody in the SEC would trade their coach for Marcus Freeman, short of maybe four or five coaches, and maybe that's too long of, so I think he's a hell of a coach, but I don't think A&M should be afraid of this team. That's not what I'm saying. But until you, and particularly on the road, I know they won last year in the Swamp, but that was after Florida got their ass kicked by Miami. I mean, those fans were ready to see Billy gone. We're back air again. But point being, until A&M goes on the road and beats a top, whatever you want to say, top 10, top 15 type team, I don't know that they should be given the benefit of the doubt. Do you?
That's a good point. I mean, last year, losing to Auburn and South Carolina on the road and winning against a kind of a wounded Florida team early in the season, I also think that kind of goes at the national narrative, which is, you know, A&M is just going to be like 8-4 indefinitely, which I don't think that's the case. But I think most people nationally would probably say, you got to go win this game to prove it, that you're going to be better than, you know, 17th in the polls and 8-4 at the end of the year, which that's the opportunity here for Texas A&M. I mean, if it really feels like when you watch this team through the first 2 weeks of the season, that the passing game is in a better spot. I'm not convinced like their rush defense is terrible, but it was an issue at times last season, and you turned over a lot of personnel. UTSA had the big rush play. Notre Dame's got a good offensive line and rushing attack. Like, there are so many individual and kind of prove it opportunities in the SEC this week, and Texas A&M is at the top of that list.
Right. And also, you know, that being said, I'm not just trying to be negative here. I've kind of already asked you this, but I believe I did on Monday. But if A&M goes to Notre Dame, let's say Notre Dame is this good team, they've just faced Miami, which they look like a really good team as well. And for all we know, A&M is a top 10-ish type team. I mean, I don't think that's unrealistic by any means, given their talent and everything there. If they beat Notre Dame, I don't think there's anybody on the schedule they can't beat. Now, I'm not suggesting they go undefeated, but I know Tiger Stadium is infinitely perhaps more difficult to play than at Notre Dame. Texas, we all know what kind of talent they're working with, but is it right or wrong to say if you can win at Notre Dame, you could conceivably beat anybody on your schedule?
Yeah, I think that's fair, because I think if Texas A&M wins this game and it's absent some sort of like crazy game where neither team plays well, there's a bunch of turnovers. If Texas A&M plays the way that we think they can, you're talking about, okay, Marcel Reed delivered on the road. The defense stepped up. they were able to stop the run. The secondary issues that we saw last year, they don't show up. The Notre Dame second receivers are much improved from last season. So that would be answering some of those preseason questions, which means that you start looking at these matchups going, okay, yeah, they beat Notre Dame. They can go beat LSU if they can, you know, get after the quarterback. They can stop the pass. Texas as well. So, yeah, there's a real opportunity, I think, here for Texas A&M to kind of answer some of the doubters and maybe make the case that, hey, this program has arrived under Mike Elko.
And the other Steven Up, he's picking A&M to win by single digits. He blew us all out of the water last week with his predictions. So I'm just saying, I'm not saying he's my favorite Steven. I'm just saying he's maybe the best Steven at picking the games. You know what?
I think he's the most accurate Steven so far. So
I also like him because he gifted a membership. Shout out, Steven Up.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven Up. He gifted Shannon Burke. Shannon, welcome to
the family.
And I miss this. Sorry, cousin Carl. Carl gifted a membership as well. Shout out, Carl. Big Tennessee homer. Keep that in mind, Stephen, when we get to the prediction there. Mr. Woods, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, courtesy cousin Carl. We appreciate you, buddy. And I hope you're trying to butter up Stephen. Maybe he'll change his picks here. But all right, so I didn't like that one, Stephen, but I like that you're keeping it. You're keeping it real. You tell us what you think. Tell us what you think for this one. Florida at LSU, number 3, LSU favored, of course, in this game at home. Night game, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central, nationally televised on ABC. The point spread, 9.5 currently, LSU's favored by, over under 54.5. Man, what a series this is, Stephen. Florida coming off a tough loss. LSU coming off an ugly win. Who do you got in this one?
Mike, let me ask you a question. Is there a chance that we should just forget about the results for both teams last week?
I certainly think that is a fair statement.
And that's kind of what interests me about this game, is it's either Billy Napier's last stand and Florida is really the team that lost to South Florida last week and has major concerns going forward about, you know, we talked about in the preseason, it is a tough schedule, but if this and this happens, they could be a playoff contender. If they lose here, you wonder where the season goes. I think for LSU, I'm totally forgetting what happened last week. They had the big win over Clemson, Louisiana Tech at home. They went through the motions. They won the game. I think what's interesting to me in this game, and there's a lot of like individual battles, but really it's the storylines here. It's LSU's chance to get revenge after what happened last year late in the swamp. You have Florida. The whole country is doubting Florida. They have no chance to go win at LSU. That may galvanize this team to some extent. They can play a lot better than they did. Can Billy Napier get this team to go on the road in Death Valley and get a win? And I think Florida's going to play well. I think they're going to bounce back to some extent. But at home, LSU's defense, defensive line, would love to see Florida's offensive line kind of play up to its potential. That'd be a heck of a battle back and forth. I think passing downs is something to watch here too, because we mentioned, you know, LSU's front, like can Florida's front get after LSU's offensive line too? Lot of opportunities here. The two quarterbacks, great quarterback battle. I want to see DJ Lagway look like the DJ Lagway we thought we would see in the preseason. Florida plays well. LSU plays better. LSU 27, Florida 20.
If it plays out that way, is this the last game of the Billy Napier era?
I think you have to start wondering, right? I mean, I guess the bye week after Miami would make sense.
I think we got to wait till the bye. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't even know if he's on the hot seat. Hell, he may get an extension, Steven. I don't know. But you hit on something critical there. And I don't know that it, you know, we could just snap our fingers and it'll happen. But you know, what in the world's wrong with DJ Lagway? I think it's why we were, you know, highlighted his absence to the degree, we did, because it was noteworthy, and it is playing out. He just looks rusty. He's missing guys. He looks hesitant. Plays are there. Now, maybe after two games, is he? Maybe he's not rusty. You know, maybe if they don't have 11 penalties, seemingly 10 in the red zone, minus the spitting, maybe they whooped South Florida. You know, and maybe this, maybe that, and Florida would be national champions, but they ain't. So I'm not suggesting they're going to look like $1 million here, but I just think that if DJ Lagway, just like you said, if he plays better, if we get the Lagway we thought we were getting, I think Florida can win this game.
I do too. I think there's also maybe a danger for LSU of just saying, well, Florida lost to South Florida, they must not be any good, right? I mean, I think LSU will be motivated because of like what happened last year, finishing the job, like going into Clemson and getting that victory, and now you've got a chance to be a playoff team. Like, it's hard for me to see LSU just totally like sleepwalking here. I think on Lagway, I know it's a small sample size and stats are what they are, but 6.7 yards per attempt after averaging 10 last year. I know his playing time has been a little skewed, but some of these big plays, Florida has the playmakers to be able, Eugene Wilson running the short stuff, and you got guys to stretch the field. Lagway's got the arm to push the ball downfield. Florida's got to be able to do that on Saturday, I think, to win.
Yeah, you mentioned Wilson. He's a good receiver, not a good lead blocker. So maybe don't dial that up, Billy. But, you know, LSU has struggled to run the ball a little bit too, even against Louisiana Tech. Now, maybe we don't put so much stock in one performance, but I think the recipe for an upset here is Florida running the ball, limiting LSU on the ground. I think if they could do that, again, that's another path to victory, I think, for the Florida Gators.
I also think it's hard to know. So LSU gave up 31 rushing yards to Clemson and under 100 last week to Louisiana Tech. I have questions about Clemson's offensive line, and their best running back right now is a converted receiver. Mm-hmm. Louisiana Tech's not very good at running the ball either. So just how good is the rush defense? I think we'll find out more against Jaden Ball on Saturday night.
Okay. How about this one, Steven? This should be a really fun conference game here. Arkansas at number 17 Ole Miss night game in Oxford, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, nationally televised ESPN. Ole Miss favored by 8.5 points, over under 62.5, far and away the highest over under in the conference this weekend. So expecting a lot of points in this one. Who do you like winning it?
Mike, I think the simple way to sum up this game is, if you like offense, this is the game for you. Because like you mentioned, the over-under is high. The two quarterbacks, Talen Green, Austin Simmons, assuming Austin Simmons is 100% and healthy and no setbacks this week, a lot of offensive fireworks are going to happen on Saturday night between these two teams. So I'm already tuned in because it's one of my top matchups of the week. But, man, I can't wait to see some high-level quarterback play. Talen Green has been red hot. Looking to see the progression by Austin Simmons, you know, coming into the season as a breakout candidate, looked pretty good, but still room to improve across the board. So with the two quarterbacks and the skill talent, I think we're going to see plenty of points here. This game could pretty much almost simply come down to the offensive line for both teams. Like, can Ole Miss and its offensive line get Kewon Lacy going on the ground against this Arkansas defensive front that has questions to give them some balance? And then which defense can make enough timely stops? Because I think the offenses are going to get theirs in this game. Small mistakes, maybe a turnover, may decide this one. I'm going to take the home team here, 31-27, Ole Miss over Arkansas. That may not be enough points, but this should be a fun one between the Razorbacks and Rebels.
Mm. And shout out Old Mace. He let me know I was looking at an old line. I didn't refresh. So it's down to Ole Miss 6.5 is the current line. So just a heads up there. I was looking at an old line. But, yeah, Man, oh man. Is there a possibility? Because I know we respect Taylen Green, but is there a possibility, Stephen, that maybe we're underrating him even, and this could be like a coming out party? I mean, there's so many quarterbacks that, you know, we know they're good, but maybe we don't know how special they are. It's like no one's going to give you too many flowers over beating Alabama, A&M, and Arkansas State. This is an opportunity, kind of like Jaden Daniels last year or 2 years ago at LSU, or, you know, John Mateer against freaking Michigan. You know, we're like, this is a coming out party for people that are unaware of how good Taylen Green is and the progression that he has made year two playing for Arkansas and Bobby Petrino, that maybe he is so good that he wills Arkansas to a win here.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's, like, when you look at his stats, like through the first 2 weeks of the season, like 10 touchdown passes, tied for the nation lead. You know, I think you could look at it and go, well, it's an FCS opponent. It's Arkansas State. Nobody's going to give them in Arkansas on the offense a lot of credit for that. But I think this gets at what you and I talked about with Arkansas in the preseason, which is, yeah, they've got questions on the defense. They've got a lot of new faces at receiver. They've played well at receiver, I think. But you have a quarterback in the second year in Bobby Petrino's offense. Like, there is the potential for that to click and take off in a big way. And maybe that's what we're seeing through the first 2 weeks of the season. Saturday night will kind of give us validation. Like, if he continues on this pace, then yeah, the Petrino plus Taylen Green, it's arrived. Arkansas is going to exceed all of our preseason expectations. Or the other side is true too. I mean, Austin Simmons has been a little bit up and down at times, need to cut down on the interceptions. But at the same time, I think the talent is there. And it's like, when he gets to that next level, this offense is going to be even more dangerous going forward for Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, two things to consider, Stephen. I mean, he exited the last game due to injury and did not return. And Kiffin says, oh, he's fine. You know, he would have played. Kiffin, I respect him as a coach. I don't really respect him to tell me the truth, particularly when it comes to injuries. So, you know, I hope Austin Simmons is 100%, and I hope he remains that way. But who knows what percentage he's at? Who knows if, you know, maybe he's good enough to play, and then, God forbid, he takes the wrong hit and in the first quarter and he's out. You know what I mean? That could certainly, we could do that for literally any player, though, so I don't really like to go down the injury narrative. But who knows? Because I just bring it up because he did exit the last game and he did not return. But for Ole Miss, here's something else I've been thinking about, Stephen. It's, in fairness to them, I think it's played out a little bit of how I thought it would, where this is, I don't want to say a rebuild, because we don't really do rebuilds in college football anymore. We got to reload via the portal. But, you know, you're going to get some inconsistency when you're doing that. And as long as you're undefeated, nobody cares how ugly it was. So there's a real shot that this week they're better, and the following week they're a little bit better. And then by LSU, you know, this is a completely different team than the one that just struggled against Kentucky on the road. I think that's fair to say too, don't you?
I do. I think in the portal era, I think we're going to get a lot of this by a lot of teams. And I think that kind of explains, like, we saw like big games in week one to week two, there was a lot of inconsistency. A lot of these teams are still working in a lot of new faces on both sides of the ball. So I think that's why you're going to get some inconsistency from these teams, and especially with Ole Miss, like, you know, the portal king and, you know, with all the new faces, it wouldn't surprise me to see this team take 4 or 5 games to get going. And I know we talked about this on the Monday show, but I do think there's like a little bit of extra motivation for Arkansas here, given all of the Fayetteville to Oxford transfers. I mean, you know, Arkansas has done good work in the portal. Lane Kiffin's the portal king. Like, I bet Sam Pittman really wants this game on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's another one, Stephen, that they really want it. And that'd be Vanderbilt against South Carolina. South Carolina, number 11. Vanderbilt, for some reason, no respect, not even ranked. I guess they can't compete in this game. 7:45 Eastern, 6:45 Central on the SEC Network. South Carolina favored by 5.5 points. Over-unders 48.5. This is a line that was bet down, though. Steven, who wins this former SEC East showdown?
Interesting to see some confidence in the Commodores, right? Mm-hmm. And deservedly so. I think it's a series that has been dominated by South Carolina. But it also feels like there's a real opportunity here for Vanderbilt. It's got to be one of the better Vanderbilt teams that certainly Clark Lee has assembled, and certainly one of the better ones in some time for Vanderbilt, a chance to break this streak. I think what fascinates me about this game is we've got two quarterbacks with different ways to hurt you. And I wonder, given where these two defenses are, which quarterback is going to make that play off script that wins the game? You know, like this could be a 17-17 game in the fourth quarter. Lenora Sellers breaks a couple tackles. He's got a 50-yard touchdown run. Or it's Pavia making some off-platform throw that scores a touchdown and Vanderbilt's ahead and they get the stop late to win. I think it's going to be a fun battle between like two magicians at quarterback, if you will, like guys that make plays like outside the pocket with, you know, trying to shake a defender. And I also like the other thing I want to see is like the battle in the trenches here. Like, can Vanderbilt do enough to block Dylan Stewart and the South Carolina front to get Seth Alexander going? We know Vanderbilt's weapons are better this year, or I think around Pavia with the receivers. So can they block and stretch the field for South Carolina? The rushing attacks kind of got to get going here. Offensive line, you know, Vakari Swain is having a great season. That's probably not what you want from your offense, is to be relying on punt returns and things like that to score. So, Mike, I think we're in for a low scoring game here. Got to take South Carolina, though. They're at home. I'll take a little bit of a bounce back by the offense, but I think this is a game well into the fourth quarter. I will take South Carolina 24, Vanderbilt 20. Home field advantage, Lenora Sellers. That's the difference for me.
Shout out Tennessee Legends, Steven. I mean, what other sponsors are giving you statistics during the show? I mean, they're basically producing this thing. Average margin of victory for South Carolina over Vanderbilt is 14.5 points for the last 16 years. So, man, that's wild to think about. It's been dominated by South Carolina. But, again, maybe that, to me, in a matchup like this, what I do think it gives South Carolina confidence, you know, that it's like, it don't matter. I mean, it's just freaking, it's a little sisters over there, you know, Vanderbilt. But at the same time, I mean, they got Diego Pavia, who you can't even say he's got a chip on his shoulder, Steven. He's got a damn boulder on his shoulder over there. You know what I mean? So to me, I think that favors Vanderbilt for confidence, for wanting this game more. Now, I don't think South Carolina's going to, like, overlook them, but I don't know. I don't know. If we're looking at just this year, which that's all that really matters, this ain't 2015 South Carolina walking out here or 2013 Vanderbilt. This is 2025 Vanderbilt versus South Carolina, and I've seen two teams take the field twice this year, Stephen. And one looks like $1 million, and the other looks like, I don't know what the hell's going on out there. So I don't know. This very well could be the game. I'll tell you what, Stephen. This is going to reveal South Carolina as a fraud, or it shall reveal Vanderbilt as a fraud. I think it's one or the other. And again, I just, you know, just that's probably the wrong word, fraud, but just, you know, I think the loser is in for a tough reality, and I think the winner is going to go on to have a really good season. But and they both could, but I think this will be a defining game for both programs this season.
I think for South Carolina, we probably should give them a little bit of a benefit of the doubt too. You know, as you brought up, like, what does the series history mean in some of these when teams are like bringing in 60 to 70 new guys every year? Like, I think the volatility from year to year is going to swing pretty wildly. But also, South Carolina played a Virginia Tech team that had a ton of new faces. Now, that means they could have played better in these areas, but Virginia Tech had two new coordinators. They've got new starters all over the place. Like, how do you get ready for that kind of a game? And then you turn around and play an FCS game that's got weather issues. It's kind of like, you know, they feel like their start to the season is a little hard to read into. And that's why I think Saturday night is so interesting to me, is like to see Vanderbilt go on the road and to see maybe a little bit more from South Carolina. But I think if you're Vanderbilt, like, and if I'm South Carolina, the thing that would catch my attention is this isn't like 2-0 Vanderbilt that just got done beating like Charleston Southern and, you know, Louisiana Monroe. They pounded Virginia Tech in the second half, and the score might have been worse had they not turned the ball over in the first half. So this is like it, same old Vanderbilt. Sure, some people can say that. I think it's a completely different team. When you talk about what they've done on the field and Diego Pavia bringing all that confidence to this game, I'm sure he's probably looking for every bit of motivation on the South Carolina message boards at this point. I think it's a different Vanderbilt, and that's why I think they got a good shot to win this game.
Mm-hmm. All right, final matchup here, Steven. You better choose wisely here if you want to return. Georgia, mighty Georgia, the best team in the land, perhaps. Number 6, Georgia, at number 15, Tennessee. College game day headed to old Rocky Top. Tennessee underdog. Georgia, of course, is the favorite. Georgia by 3.5 is another one. I believe it opened at 6.5, 7, something like that. Over under 49.5 total points. 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central, nationally televised on old ABC. Steven, who do you like in this showdown?
Mike, this is a hard game to figure out, isn't it? I mean, you know, you've seen Tennessee look so good through the first 2 weeks of the season, and the matchups were heavily in their favor. Joey Aguilar's look great. Offense is firing on all cylinders. We haven't seen that out of Georgia. And I think there's probably some reasons for that. Like, looking ahead to this game, the way the first two opponents played out, the weather against Austin Peay, like, you could understand that they're holding back for this game. So I think that's kind of the storyline for me, is you got Tennessee who looks so great. Georgia's looked just okay, but there's probably more there. And I'm thinking about this game in the backdrop of like Tennessee beating Alabama a few years ago. Is like, you almost want to see it happen before you can pick it, right? You know, but the timing of this game feels right for Tennessee to pick off Georgia. They're getting Georgia at home. Gunnar Stockton's got less than 5 starts. We don't know exactly how this offensive line for Georgia, the passing game, like, is it going to be able to execute if they need to on passing downs? It's one thing to do it against Austin Peay and Marshall. It's another against a good Tennessee front. I think for all the attention that the quarterbacks are getting, I think line of scrimmage is really crucial here, because Georgia's offensive line has got to play well. They've got to be able to run the ball and protect Gunnar Stockton. Also, would not surprise me if Gunnar Stockton makes a couple plays with his legs in the game that could be the difference here. I think Tennessee's got a good shot to win this game. But Mike, it is Show Me Saturday, right?
We got to go. See ya. No.
I'm taking Georgia 27, Tennessee 20. I think the Dogs show who the real Georgia is this week and play at a higher level than we've seen, and win this game in a very hostile environment in Knoxville.
I don't know if you can hear my dog going off, but he's saying,
he's not
ever
happy
have Steven back on this program. But I get everything you're saying. What confidence level that Gunnar can get this done, though? That, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question going into this matchup. First true road start for old Gunnar. He's been inconsistent, I would say, to put it kindly. And again, he's not been terrible by any means, but if you're Tennessee, you almost have to make this guy beat you. That would be my big question if I'm Georgia.
I think if you're Georgia, you could leave this game feeling a lot better about yourself if Gunnar Stockton has a huge day through the air. Like, that would answer a lot of questions about Georgia. But I think this game is more likely to play out that he is just one of a key cog. Like, I think it's going to be defense, running the ball, and Stockton here and there. Like, if he has to be throwing consistently in this game, and that's probably a problem for Georgia. Now, maybe he can do that, but I think we should also think about that he's played Texas and he's played Notre Dame. He's played great defenses. Tennessee's got a good defense, and the road environment is another aspect in all of this. So I think it's a chance for Gunnar Stockton to kind of step up and prove himself this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Any concern that Georgia on the ground has looked solid, I would say. Again, it's tough to judge based on the competition. But, I mean, even I rewatched their game against Austin Peay this morning, and I just can't get it out of my head. I mean, Kirby was fired up. He was going off on his team. They couldn't push it in. It was just one possession, but it was on the goal line against Austin Peay. They had a couple opportunities, and I mean, one or two even from literally within the one, and they could not push it in on Austin Peay. Now, they had about four other scoring drives where they went up and down the field on them, so it's not like they couldn't get a push on Austin Peay. But that, you know, that after being 15th in the SEC in rushing, should be an emphasis on that. I don't know. I'm a little concerned. I don't know that there's a question in there, but maybe just on the line of scrimmage, Georgia's a little banged up on the offensive line. You know, that to me is a concern. Of course, Tennessee's banged up on the defensive line, so maybe it's a wash there. But
and a corner too.
Right. Yeah, I was hoping you forgot about that. But yeah, I don't know. This is. I think the injuries favor Georgia, if that makes sense, but there's a lot of questions there. I think I think if Gunner's on point, if he can get the ball in his hands of his receivers, I agree 100% with you. I think Georgia wins, but I don't think that's a given that they get that done.
I think the rushing attack and the offensive line, I think you could say the jury's still out to some extent, because like, what do you, I know the possession you're talking about, Austin Peay, had to be really frustrating because it's like, it's an FCS defense. He should be able to get these yards. They've had some injuries. They have a lot of turnover. It may take a couple games. You know, were they working on some things? And then week three, this group looks a lot better. I could see that. But I think for as much as Stockton and Aguilar matter here, it's almost like just a basic like line of scrimmage thing, because if Tennessee gets Georgia in 3rd and 7 all game, I think Tennessee's going to win. I think if Georgia's able to get its ground game going and Stockton hits a few play action shots, it's 3rd and 3, they'll win. I think you say the same thing too on the other side of the ball. I mean, Tennessee's offensive line is, you know, brand new, had some guys banged up. Wouldn't surprise me if Georgia's defense, given the series history that and Heupel and Kirby, that Georgia's defense could be the difference here too.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's kind of my key to the game. It's first down, the winner of first down. You could say that basically any game, but I just think it's paramount for this one, because you gotta keep Georgia's pass rush off Aguilar on third downs, and Tennessee's got to win first downs against Georgia to force Gunner to beat him on third. I really do think. I think that'll be critical to the outcome of this game.
I do too. Like, it's funny to, you know, for all the, you know, attention that Aguilar and Stockton are going to get, it's figuring out who can stay in like manageable down distance most of the game. And I think Aguilar is going to play okay here. I don't think he's going to be terrible or anything like that. I just think, you know, for Tennessee, it's like, you don't want him to be winning this game all on his own. Like, you want to be able to mix in that ground game. And so, you know, this Tennessee offensive line with its new faces going up against a good Georgia defensive front, how does that battle shake out? And then, of course, we, you know, the other side for Georgia's offensive line. So that's kind of why, I mean, I've got it 27-20, but it also wouldn't shock me if it's a lot lower scoring than that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, we should say this too. Let's assume that Stockton is just okay in this game, and it is a 20-20 game in the fourth quarter. I actually probably would trust Tennessee to make like one big play on offense to maybe win this game. Because I think Aguilar could maybe like they could bust the coverage for Georgia. They could hit a 40-yard bomb. You know, Tennessee's defensive backs are banged up too, so there's some mixing and matching there. But it may take first downs, line of scrimmage, and like who's winning, like the one or two big plays that decide this game.
Mm-hmm. And you always gotta remember. I don't know if it truly has. Well, no, I think it does. I think it does. I think it's got a lot to do with this game, Stephen. I don't believe that there's a team that Kirby Smart hates more than old Tennessee. So just keep that in your back pocket. I mean, there's a reason they come out. They put a whooping on Tennessee. This is like, I think this is Kirby's favorite game. I think people think it's Alabama. It's not Alabama. It's not even Florida, I don't think. I think it's damn Tennessee. So keep that in your back pocket. Hey, you haven't given us your John Mateer lock of the week. And just an update, Steven's 0 for 2. So
Fade me.
You may want to fade old Steven. But do you have a John Mateer lock of the week?
Mike, I do. My John Mateer 5-star lock of the week. I know I made Texas A&M fans mad by picking against them, but I'm going to take them as the lock of the week. I think they're going to cover in South Bend. So give me the Aggies to cover and be my lock of the week.
Oh, great. So you just cursed them. Okay, yep. I got that. And then let me ask you, of the marquee games, so, you know, any of these – particularly the conference or the Notre Dame A&M game. Is there a big game of the predictions you just made that you're least confident in your prediction?
I think Georgia and Tennessee, only because I guess you could throw Notre Dame and Texas A&M in there. Like those are the two I struggled the most with this week. Mm-hmm. I felt good about LSU and Ole Miss, but just not knowing what Georgia is makes this game hard to figure out. And then on the other side, just like I think A&M is undervalued in the spread, but how much does that off week help Notre Dame? So those two I think were the hardest ones, Georgia and the picks for Georgia and Notre Dame. Those are the two I probably have the least confidence in.
Mm-hmm. And then final thing, we haven't asked you this before, but Shane and I always talk about it, and I just thought it would be fun if the games break down the way you predict that they will. What do you predict the storylines, the main storylines, if you got one or two in the SEC will be come Sunday?
If LSU wins, I think the conversation on the LSU side is it's another check in their favor that they can win the national championship this year. But if they take care of business on Saturday night, the other side is like the clock starts to tick. Like you move that hand a little closer to midnight for Billy Napier. I think the other one is Georgia. I think it's like we saw them play against Marshall. We saw them against Austin Peay. If they win on Saturday, the conversation will be Kirby's got this figured out. Like we've been sleeping on Georgia. You know, I know you and I haven't, but I think nationally people want to know exactly what Georgia is at this point. So I think if they win on the road in Knoxville, the conversation is Georgia is back. Don't forget about Georgia in that national title conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stephen. Well, we went well over an hour here. Really appreciate you stopping by, dropping so much knowledge on us, even though most of your predictions will be wrong, I think, particularly in the Tennessee game. But before you go, as always, will you remind the cousins how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. You can check out all my work at AthlonSports.com. I'm over on Twitter at AthlonSteven and StephenLCFB over on Facebook and Instagram.
All right, Stephen, I can't thank you enough. I hope you enjoy the weekend of action here. Shane and I will be back tonight for a mailbag edition, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, same time as always. And then Shane and I will be making our picks there on Thursday. So, again, we thank you, Stephen. We thank each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll catch you here in a couple hours. Until then, we'll see you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.